commentator Gary Joyner explores how the U.S. military is back to demonstrating its deterrence capabilities.
Deterrence in military strategy is a term that has been out of vogue, especially since September 11, 2001. The term deterrence has as many definitions as people who define it. On an individual level, deterrence creates inhibited criminal behavior by creating fear of punishment. For nations, it is best represented by the creation and maintenance of military power for the sole purpose of discouraging attacks and the promise of punishment so severe that the attacker would not seriously contemplate an aggressive action. It appears to be all but impossible to deter those bent on attacking powerful nations by using guerrilla tactics and asymmetrical warfare. This has changed within the last few years. The world has witnessed the rise of a resurgent Russia under Vladimir Putin. The Russian invasion of Crimea and eastern Ukraine has increased tensions within Europe at a time of severe international economic stress. Simultaneously, the People's Republic of China has increased the area it claims in the South China Sea by patrolling and actually creating new islands in the Paracels and in the Spratly Islands. The Paracel Islands are claimed by China, Taiwan, and Vietnam. The Spratly Islands are claimed to some degree by the Brunei, China, Malaysia, Philippines, Malaysia, Taiwan, and Vietnam. These aggressive intentions, combined with Russian intervention in Syria, brings deterrence and deterrence theory back into focus. In 1945, elation over the surrender of the Empire of Japan soon gave way to consternation over Soviet-Russian intentions to remain in Eastern Europe. The rebuilding of the former enemies of Germany and Japan and allies in Western Europe advanced the Marshall Plan. This vital economic program was as much preventing communist takeovers as providing desperately needed revitalization. The Truman Doctrine grew out of preventing the Soviets from conquering Europe by either political or military means and isolating the communists through the policy of containment. As the Cold War became an ever more dangerous reality, Truman's foreign and domestic policies concentrated on protecting the United States and its allies. The Truman administration brought the United Nations into policy, built alliances that created NATO and other regional affiliations. It created the Strategic Air Command and reorganized the War Department into the Department of Defense. The Air Force was given equal footing with the Army and the Navy. The Soviets intimidated the West by attempting a stranglehold on the city of Berlin. North Korea invaded South Korea with strong backing from both the Soviets and the People's Republic of China. The Russians, with the assistance of a deeply entrenched spy network, built and exploded an atomic bomb much faster than the West believed possible. President Truman, attempting to be ahead in the arms race, decided to build the hydrogen bomb. A massive arms built up by the United States followed in an attempt to catch up with the anticipated Soviet progress in arms. President Truman was assisted during his presidency by advisors who varied widely in their views regarding economics, defense strategy, and the Soviet Union. Hardline anti-communists battled with others who were accommodating to the Soviet designs. The beginnings of the Red Scare surfaced with the revelations of spy networks deep inside America's nuclear program. The position papers that emerged from the President's National Security Council and hybrid consulting groups such as the RAND Corporation reflect these deep divisions. Two seminal documents emerged from the NSC during this period. They define the course that the United States would follow throughout the Cold War, and it's reasonable to assume, in some form, to the present. That is why history matters.
Dr. Gary Joyner is a history professor at LSU Shreveport.